ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, Chapter 4, Text 35, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yajñātvāna punarmoham evam yāsyasi pāndava yena bhūtānya sheshāni Drakshyasyatmanyathomai Yajñātvāna punarmoham Evaṁ yāsyasi pāṇḍava Yena bhūtānya sheshāṇi Drakshyasyatmanyathomai Yajñātvāna punarmoham Evaṁ yāsyasi pāṇḍava Yena bhūtānya sheshāṇi Drakshyasyatmanyathomai
Yajñātvāna punarmoham
Evaṁ yāsyasi pāṇḍava
Yena bhūtānya sheshāṇi
No. Twice you're doing it wrong. It should be Yena bhūtānya sheshāṇi. It's all not Yena bhūtānya sheshāṇi. You're adding an extra syllable. And again, drakshasi atman, not drakshasi atmani. It's all flowing. So try again. Try the last two lines again.
Yena bhūtānya sheshāṇi.
Drakshasi atman yato mai.
Yajñātvāna punarmoham
evaṁ yāsyasi pāṇḍava
yena bhūtānya sheshāṇi
rakṣasi ātman yato mai
Yajñātvāna punarmoham
Yena bhūtānya sheshāṇi
Drakshasyātmanyatomai
Well, you have to learn. Well, the Sanskrit's there. The Nagari Lipi is there. Both are Sanskrit. Okay, anyone else? Are you afraid of getting called out?
Yajñātvāna
punarmoham
evaṁ yāsyasi pāṇḍava
yena bhūtānya sheshāṇi
While we're on the topic of pronunciation, I have given a lecture on this, which you're all welcome to listen to. One thing I didn't note in that, but is very common in the Western world, is Guru Mukha Padma Vakya. Everyone sings Padma Vakya. Vakya. You were singing and everyone else was singing this one. And everywhere. I don't know where Vakya came from. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya. And there are so many others also. You please all listen to that, because so many mispronunciations are institutionalized, it seems. But as we're going to sing the same things every day, we might as well do it right. Right? For the pleasure of the Lord. It's all for His pleasure. So if you, just like if you mispronounce someone's name wrongly once or twice, it's understandable, but throughout your whole life, why? Why say it wrongly? You can get it right. Okay, anyone else? No? Okay. Yat.
Yes.
So now I'm pronouncing it wrongly, isn't it? It says Yaj. No, Yat. Oh, it changes. Yat changes to Yaj. Happens in English, but not, the spelling doesn't change. Just like you would say, the cat, but you might say the animal. You ever notice that? It's the same word, but it's spelled differently depending on what comes afterwards.
Can I just move a little bit, just for, I'm thinking of the Mayapur
too. Okay. So, yet,
which?
You have to see it written, yeah, because it could mean one of those nasty creatures who come around at night on a broomstick. By hearing, you couldn't say. So, yatva, knowing,
na,
never, punaha,
again,
moham, to illusion.
Evam,
like this.
Yasyasi,
you shall
go. You shall go.
Pandava,
Pandava,
O son of Pandu.
Yena,
by which?
Bhutani,
living entities.
Asheshani,
all.
Drakshasi,
you will see.
Atmani,
in the Supreme Soul,
Atha,
U,
or in other words,
Mai,
in me.
Translation, having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion, for by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. Purport. Jai, yeah, that's right. Got it, after millions of lifetimes. Jai! Okay, purport, you have to do that. The result of receiving knowledge from a self-realized soul, or one who knows things as they are, is learning that all living beings are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The sense of an existence separate from Krishna is called Maya. Ma, not ya, this. Something that we have nothing to do with Krishna, that Krishna is only a great historical personality, and that the Absolute is the impersonal Brahman. Factually, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, this impersonal Brahman is the personal effulgence of Krishna. Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of everything. In the Brahma Sanghita, it is clearly stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. Even the millions of incarnations are only His different expansions. Similarly, the living entities are also expansions of Krishna. The Mayavadi philosophers wrongly think that Krishna loses His own separate existence in His many expansions. This thought is material in nature. We have experienced in the material world that a thing, when fragmentally distributed, loses its original identity. But the Mayavadi philosophers fail to understand that absolute means that 1 plus 1 is equal to 1, and that 1 minus 1 is also equal to 1. This is the case in the absolute world. For want of sufficient knowledge in the absolute science, we are now covered with illusion, and therefore we think that we are separate from Krishna. Although we are separated parts of Krishna, we are nevertheless not different from Him. The bodily difference of the living entities is maya, or not actual fact. We are all meant to satisfy Krishna. By maya alone, Arjuna thought that the temporary bodily relationship with his kinsmen was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted toward this end, that a living being as Krishna's eternal servitor cannot be separated from Krishna, and his sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called maya. The living entities are separate parts and parcels of the Supreme, have a purpose to fulfill. Having forgotten that purpose since time immemorial, they are situated in different bodies as men, animals, demigods, etc. Such bodily differences arise from forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. But when one is engaged in transcendental service through Krishna consciousness, one becomes at once liberated from this illusion. One can acquire such pure knowledge only from the bona fide spiritual master, and therefore thereby avoid the delusion that the living entity is equal to Krishna. Perfect knowledge is that the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is the supreme shelter for all living entities, and giving up such shelter, the living entities are deluded by the material energy, imagining themselves to have a separate identity. Thus, under different standards of material identity, they become forgetful of Krishna. When, however, such deluded living entities become situated in Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood that they are on the path of liberation as confirmed in the Bhagavatam. Muktir banyatha rupang swarupena vyavasthitihi. Liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Continuing the theme that I was speaking on this morning about knowing everything and not knowing everything. How you can know everything without not knowing everything, which sounds contradictory. But one of the things about knowing everything is that you can't know everything. Another thing about knowing everything is that knowing everything according to material calculations of what it means to know everything might not work to really know everything, as for instance Srila Prabhupada states here in this purport that absolute means that 1 + 1 is equal to 1. Now, at approximately the age of 5, children learn that if they write 1 + 1 = 1, they get a cross mark, means they didn't get it right. But that's not all, because Srila Prabhupada further writes that 1 - 1 is also equal to 1. Srila Prabhupada writes, this is the case in the absolute world. In the absolute world, that means that mathematics work differently there. Well, not really, but mathematics is, for starters, not even required there. The point is that Krishna is unlimited. He is that one. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahubhividhati kaman. He is that one who is absolute and all others are relative to him. Eko bahasyam. This word eka comes many times in the Upanishads. So Krishna is that one unlimited, so if you add infinity to infinity, you get infinity. What if you subtract infinity from infinity? There's a question that might not even be for a mathematician, it might be more for a philosopher. Anyway, the answer is one. Actually, if you take away, if Krishna vanishes, then he becomes more. That's why he vanishes sometimes. He showed himself to Narada, and then he vanished. And Narada was lamenting and said, well, I did that so you'd feel me more. Oh. Because Krishna's everywhere, but Krishna vanishes because you may feel, the devotee may feel his presence more in separation. That's what he said to the gopis also. That I left you and I wasn't there, but I was there in your hearts even more. So this is not exactly mathematics. It's much more than that. Now, this morning we were talking, one point is that knowing, it's not just A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. It's a question of realization also. This verse, which we just chanted together, comes in the chapter titled Transcendental Yoga. Sorry, Transcendental Knowledge, Jnana Yoga in Sanskritam. It comes after the well-known verse, Tadvidhi Pranipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya Upadekshyanti Te Jnanam Jnaninas Tattvadarshinaha. That one should approach. Well, let's just read out Prabhupada's translation. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So one should go to a guru for the sake of learning the truth. Tad vijnanartham sagurum eva abhigacchet. For the sake of attaining that vijnana, that transcendental knowledge, one must approach a guru. So one approaches to get knowledge, and with submission one should approach a guru, asking relevant questions and being prepared to serve in all respects. And then knowledge is imparted. But the knowledge is given right in the next verse, which is the verse which we just read, that when you get the knowledge, then you'll understand, or you'll see that all living beings are part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. Okay, that's the knowledge. That's what you have to learn from the Guru. And elsewhere in this purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, perfect knowledge is that the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is the supreme shelter for all living entities. And giving up such shelter, the living entities are deluded by the material energy, imagining themselves to have a separate identity. So that's the knowledge. So why do you have to go to a guru? It's right there. There it is. That's the knowledge you have to get. So what do you need a guru for? You buy a Bhagavad Gita as it is, probably get one for £5, or if you're hard on your luck, just £2 from a book distributor. And you don't need a guru. That's it. That's the knowledge, and it's right there. But then Krishna says before that you have to go to a guru. What to do? It seems to be why all this trouble of going to a guru to get knowledge, and the knowledge is right there? Well, there's a question of knowing, and a question of understanding, and a question of realizing. One may know theoretically and be able to pass the Bhakti Shastra exam, but practically understanding that requires to completely make it one with our own consciousness. We understand, okay, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. All right. And so many times we hear this question. Yeah, when I'm in the class, everything seems quite clear. But as soon as I go out, then again I get in Maya. So why is that? Because of having a different concept of life from time immemorial, it seems to us natural that I'm meant to be an enjoyer of this world. See, there are things nice to look at, let's go and look at them. Nice things to taste, let's taste them. I can enjoy, why shouldn't I? Why should I get up early in the morning? What's the point of that? It's better to sleep. I'm more comfortable if I sleep. Why should I only take prasadam when there are so many nice things? I'll still be a vegetarian. But what's all this? I have to take prasadam only. Why all this austerity? It doesn't seem to be necessary. Just know that I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. Well, you know you're an eternal servant of Krishna, then you have to serve Krishna. How do you serve Krishna? Well, I have to serve him according to what's in the Shastra. Then you go to a guru, he'll teach you. But then you may say, well, I can read the Shastras myself. That verse, or part of a verse I quoted this morning, that Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta. One should find out a Mahajan and follow him. Well, that verse begins that Tarko Pratishta Shutayo Vibhinna Na Savrishya Yasya Matam Nabhinnam Dharmasya Tatvam Nihitam Guhayam Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta. Begins by saying that the path of philosophical discussion is inconclusive. Okay? Then the Shrutis, in the Vedas, and by Shruti it's understood to mean Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, all the Vedic corpus, they are different. They may say different things. That's why this morning I also discussed there are followers of the Vedas called Mimamsakas who have a completely different outlook on life to the followers of Vedanta who are also followers of the Vedas. Completely, just about as opposite as possible, as possibly could be. And they're all following the Vedas. One reason for that, or at least the superficial or manifest reason. No, that's superficial and manifest. Yeah, okay. The manifest reason is that the Vedas apparently say different things. In some places it says, do yajnas, be pious, and enjoy the world in this life and the next. And another part, the part that we've emphasized as Vedantists, follow the Vedanta, or the end portion of the Vedas, is that no, this material world is miserable, that these statements in the Vedas to enjoy yourself, that's just a bait to get people to follow that so that they can start to become pious. That's actually stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that they're inducements, just like a child may be given some sweets by the parents to induce the child to take medicine, which he doesn't want to take. So the Vedas seem to say, well, they do. They say they give different prescriptions. So if we say just follow the Vedas, then immediately there's a difference on which portion of the Vedas to emphasize. And then again, when we come to Vedanta, again there's a division there. Which portion of Vedanta to emphasize? The Bheda Shruti or the Abheda Shruti? Those that emphasize the difference, that there are differences, or those that emphasize non-difference. So what to do? Let's work it out. Let's see what the different philosophers say. But the different philosopher, the very fact that they're a philosopher means they all have different opinions. In fact, you can't be a philosopher unless you have a different opinion to someone else. Na sav rishya yasya matang na bhinnam. That's what it means. You can't be called... You're not a real rishi unless you can come up with some theory different to someone else. Then you get in the big league of rishis when you dream up some new philosophy. So that may be either on the basis of the Vedas or on the basis of total speculation, which is Western philosophy, is total speculation. Doesn't mean they're not intelligent, but they are maya parita jnana. Their knowledge is taken away by illusion. So where do you go? Where to find out the truth of dharma, the truth of reality? Well, dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam. This is literally translated in one of the 19th century translations of the Mahabharata by, I can't remember which one it was. No, it wasn't Ganguly, it was the M.N. Datta, his translation, in which he says that the truth of religion is hidden in the caves. It's in the cave. Guha means cave. So you might think, go to the caves and find it out. Something like the Dead Sea Scrolls. It must be hidden away in some cave. But the guha also means the cavity of the heart, within the depths of the heart. And that especially means the heart of self-realized person. So, therefore, the truth of religion is to be found, it's hidden away in the hearts of self-realized persons. Therefore, you should find Mahajana, such a great person, and follow what the path that they all prescribe. And you may say, well, there are so many Mahajanas, what's the difference between a Mahajana and a Rishi? Then again, there may be different opinions, but if we come to Vaishnav exegesis, that means analysis of Shastra, we'll find that all the greatest personalities, they all accept that Vishnu is supreme. Great personalities, examples are given in the Bhagavatam. Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapila, Manuhu, Prahlada, Janako, Bhishmas, Balir, Vyasakir, Vayam. Vayam means Yamaraj here. So these are 12 great personalities. Brahma, Narada, Shiva, Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Sanat and other Kumaras, Kapila, not the atheist, but the theist, or rather the incarnation of Godhead, Kapila, Manuhu, Swayambhuva Manu, another Swayambhuva Manu, Prahlada, Janak, Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Shukadev Goswami, and Yamaraj, they all agree that dharmaṁ tu sākṣād bhagavat pranītam, dharma is that which is given by Bhagavan, and they all agree that Bhagavan, sabhagavan swayam Krishna, later Shankaracharya, who is considered a great Mahājana by many people, he gave the philosophy of Advaitavad, Kevala Advaitavad, but if we seek of undifferentiated oneness, but if we seek carefully within his teachings, we'll find his theistic statements such as Sabhagavan Swayam Krishna. Krishna, that Bhagavan is Krishna. In the very beginning of his Gita commentary, he speaks about the avyakta, the unmanifest, and states that Narayana Paravyaktat, that Narayana is superior to that which is unmanifest. So, if we dispassionately study all philosophy, and Vedic philosophy, because Veda means that there should be the truth. There is true knowledge. It must exist. So that knowledge is the Vedas. It's not that we can just dream it up in our minds. So if we dispassionately study the Vedic literature, especially that explained by the great personalities, all the great personalities conclude Krishna is supreme, then we can come to the conclusion given here. But it's much easier to go to someone rather than study ourselves, just to go to someone who can explain all these things to us. Mayavadi will explain this verse differently. Yena bhutan yasheshani drakshas yatmani. Now I said atmani, but that's okay because I didn't say the next word. Certain words, atma, atman, they will be explained differently. The Mayavadis who want to equate atma with their conception of undifferentiated Brahman, they will say that this verse means that when you get the knowledge that is to be had, that you'll find that all living beings are simply Atma. That's all. They're all, and they'll come to the conclusion, it's all one. But Krishna, Aham Atma Gura Akesha, well, he says, I am the Atma, Saha. Sarvabhuta Shayastitaha, I am the Atma within everyone. And Paramatneti, what is that? Paramatneti ityukta. That Paramatma is described in 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Dehesmin Purusha Paraha. And that is, he is within, it is the supreme being within everyone, situated within everyone, and that Paramatma is Krishna himself. So if we're fortunate to get a Vaishnava guru, he will teach us all these things. It's not just a matter, however, of learning by rote, but one has to imbibe that. Therefore, sometimes we hear people say, well, Prabhupada's books, they're repetitive. Well, in one sense, well, there's no doubt about it. In one sense, yeah, but on the Bhagavad Gita itself, if you want to make a charge that of repetitiveness, then in Bhagavad Gita itself, we have the same points being discussed again and again. The point is to make the point again and again and again from different angles, so that we can imbibe it. Otherwise, we may hear it once and theoretically understand it, but not take it to heart. And even if we take it to heart, still Maya is there to try to delude us. So knowledge, we go to a guru for knowledge and for guidance. We often think of the guru living in the forest with a few disciples. Of course, things are generally very different in the modern age. It's the jet-set gurus flying around here and there, going to different places to dispense this knowledge. And they may not see their disciples very often. That's not a new model, though, because Ramanuja, he did that. Traveled here and there, made disciples here and there. Before him, Shankara traveled all over India India at that time, when we think of India now, we think of India up to Amritsar, but then very importantly, what is now Pakistan, that was also, so all these acharyas that go up to Sindh, Punjab, all these areas, which are now supposedly in Pakistan. They traveled widely and made disciples, spoke to them, and maybe went on and never saw them again. Madhavendra Puri is described in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. Nityananda spent several years with him. But when Madhavendra Puri came to the house of Advaita Acharya, he just stayed for a short time, initiated him, went on, and was never seen again. Advaita Acharya was already a great Vaishnava. Even before, of course, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the point here is that it may be that one doesn't get that much association. Even Srila Prabhupada said, I never met my guru more than a dozen times. But he was able to take the essence. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Korea Aikya Anga Korea Mone Asha. He was able to take out that essence. Whereas others who heard him again and again and again, repeatedly over many years, might not have done so to the extent that Srila Prabhupada did. So generally it's considered. You have to associate with it, of course, associate with the Guru and hear again and again. But that hearing, there's a matter of quality also. In the prepared heart, in the heart that is ready to accept that knowledge, then that knowledge and realization and commitment and devotion to Krishna, in the heart that is ready for that, then it will very quickly accept that. Just like a spark, if it falls on dry grass, then very quickly there'll be a fire. But if it falls on wet grass, then the spark will not ignite it at all. It will simply go out. Apart from approaching a guru for knowledge, devotees also expect some emotional exchange. Even the Mayavadis, who are supposed to be not concerned with, ultimately not concerned with personality at all, they also, many of them, report affectionate dealings between guru and disciple, and that's expected. Why should anyone be a guru at all? Well, there could be different reasons for that. Someone could be a guru for promoting himself. Then it becomes a symbiotic cheating relationship. The guru accepts disciples because now I got more and I'll show how many disciples I have and they'll promote me and make me big and bring me more disciples. And the disciples also think, I got a big guru. So that increases my prestige. Or I dumped all my sinful reactions on him. There may be different material. Or he'll give me blessings. So he'll do all the work. I don't have to do any bhakti. It's just all by the guru's blessings. Or even more materialistically, that by the guru's blessings, I'll get my business will prosper, and so on and so on. There's no real affection in such a relationship at all. There may be some semblance of affection, but it's mundane. So it's the cheaters and the cheated. The willingly cheated. In this age, there are many cheaters ready to cheat those who are willing to be cheated. But in a truly spiritual relationship, there is affection, because spiritual means absence of selfishness. The guru takes that role not for self-promotion or for any mundane reason. Getting old, I need a few disciples, otherwise who's going to look after me in old age? That's another possible motive. But because feeling gratitude towards his own guru for having given him Krishna consciousness, then he feels impelled to give that to others. And you say, well, you can give it to others without being guru. Well, not really, because as soon as you start to teach and others start to take one seriously, then at least informally one is a guru to them. But the motive is there to give, take this knowledge. Take this knowledge. And it's not just knowledge, but a whole mindset, which is to be imbibed and inculcated. So giving selflessly, those who receive that mercy, they naturally feel affection, and those and they respond with gratefulness, and then the guru feels affection to them. So there's an exchange also of affection. So devotees, they naturally want that. But then again, we have to be realistic, in as much as unlike Krishna, who can expand himself into unlimited forms to dance individually with each. Yeah, put your phone off, please. Please, everyone, when you come in the temple, you see the signs right there in front of your face. Take it seriously. Put your phone off. So what was I saying?
One has to be realistic.
Yeah, one has to be realistic. Krishna, he expands himself, one Krishna form for every gopi. But the guru is... he can also, tam sarva bhuta hridayam munimanato smi, described about Shukadeva, he can enter the hearts of all. So by Krishna's arrangement, guru can enter the hearts of the disciple. But as far as personal, what we call physical association is concerned, that is liable to be limited. So that's realistic, isn't it? Even in an ashram, if there are many, especially if there are more and more disciples, then some will deal, if the guru is just living in an ashram in one place, we have this idealistic conception of a guru living in the ashram and disciples all around him. But then he'll deal with a few more than others, generally speaking. So how does the guru instruct? Obviously by teaching, may instruct by saying that you take association with others, you read this book, don't read this book, in various directions may be given to individuals. Srila Prabhupada, being realistic, I've said this many times, but the question comes up again and again, so I'm discussing this again. Srila Prabhupada, realistically, didn't, once the number of his disciples started expanding, he didn't try to personally instruct each one of them. He may give some small instructions to some individuals, but he worked through his closest disciples, and then he told the others, you take instruction from them. And of course, Srila Prabhupada kept an eye on his leading disciples to see that they were instructing properly, and he gave a lot of association to them. And Srila Prabhupada gave classes regularly. He wrote by dictating, and therefore we have so many books. We can take advantage of these books. And this is the way that gurus instruct, by regularly teaching from the scriptures, reading the scriptures to their disciples, explaining them. And disciples, to a large extent, they may be able to imbibe a lot just by reading, but the fine-tuning is also required, in which the guru will help if there are points which are not so very clearly understood, or apart from understanding, keeping the disciple on the right path, oh, now he's understood so much, very good. Oh, now he's becoming egoistic about it. No, no, that's not good. But he may not tell him directly. In this way, the guru helps the disciple. It's Guru Krishna Prasad. It's not just guru. Krishna also helps. Krishna from within the heart helps the sincere disciple. Actually, there's no difference between them. But in one sense, there's no difference between Krishna and guru in their function of instructing the disciple. But one, Krishna works from inside and guru works from outside. That's described by Uddhava speaking to Krishna about how merciful Krishna is. He's Chaitya Guru, the guru within the heart, and also manifests as the Acharya who instructs from outside. So the guru is supposed to clarify everything. One may not may read or not understand, or you think you understand, but you think about it some more, and then you realize, oh, I don't fully understand that. Or one may think he understands, and then someone, an atheist, or someone comes and gives some other idea, and the disciple becomes disturbed, and then the guru may repeat the same knowledge which he spoke before, and in this way helps the disciple to understand. This morning I spoke about how part of understanding everything is to understand that we can't understand everything. Understand everything means, according to our capacity, as very limited jivas. Another point is to understand that, well, we may understand, but we won't understand everything all at once. Or even if we understand, there's more to be understood about it. Just like Krishna is the Supreme Controller. We understand, all right, Krishna is the Supreme Controller. But then we may have some experience which really brings that close home to us when we see that Krishna is making so many arrangements for spreading the Sankirtan movement, or we may have to accept it on faith that Krishna is the Supreme Controller. Then why am I suffering so much? Why are there so many obstacles in my devotional life? We said, you still see Krishna is the Controller. Krishna's arranging this for my advancement. These obstacles, they may be arranged by Krishna for my advancement. I wanted to chant extra rounds, but I lost my voice. I can hardly chant any rounds. Why? Why did Krishna do that? If Krishna's the controller, why didn't he help me? And then we see that. And we see, and then we have to look into our heart. Oh, maybe I was thinking, I'm going to chant so many rounds. Maybe we're egoistic about it. It's an opportunity for interest. Or we may think, I don't know why. I was going to chant extra rounds with all sincerity. I don't know why Krishna arranged it. Then we can understand, yeah, Krishna arranged it just to ram home the point that man proposes and God disposes in the spiritual field as well as the material field. So by study of Shastra, hearing from Guru, associating with Guru, and Guru of course doesn't mean only the particular initiating or Shiksha Guru, but one who's very intelligent, takes guidance, good guidance wherever he gets it, and even can take guidance from non-devotees, not exactly in understanding spiritual knowledge, but we can we can take lessons, let's say. That's a better word than taking guidance. We can take lessons from the mistakes of the karmis, from the misapplied good qualities of the non-devotees. For instance, someone may be very determined to do something completely useless, but we can get some lesson in determination. How a story I heard many, many years ago, which I still repeat, that some devotees in Germany They saw they were going for the daily service was to go out in the streets and distribute books. And one day the weather was absolutely terrible. It was very cold, below zero, snowing. And they thought, why don't we just take a break today? It's not a bad idea to take a break time to time and do some extra reading. So they said, okay. And then they heard, what is that supposed to be the sound of? A pneumatic drill, which in those days, nowadays it's done by some big machine, looks something like a, what is it, something like a crane or something. But those men used to physically hold them and push them in the ground. So the men are doing road works in the cold. They're doing that, why? For sense gratification. So if they can be out in the cold and the snow for sense gratification, we can be out in the snow selling books for Krishna. So they went out. We're not going to learn from the from those road working men how to love Krishna or how to serve Krishna, but we can learn from them how to serve even in adverse circumstances. They're serving for the sake of sense gratification, we have to serve Krishna. That's all. Chintamani, the prostitute, said to Bilvamanga, if you had as much attachment to Krishna as you had to me, so it's the same thing. It's attachment. But attachment to that which is attachment to Krishna, we can see materialists are very attached to Krishnetara, that which appears to be separate from Krishna. So it's all a learning process. Learning is by hearing, by considering. The Upanishadic language is shavana, shavana, manana, nididhyasanam, to hear, to consider, and then to take very deeply into our consciousness. So this is how hearing works. By hearing about Krishna, śrīndatāṁ svakatā Krishna punya śravana kirtana hridyantastho hiyabhadrāni vidhunoti suhritsatam, that just by hearing about Krishna from the proper source, that in itself is purifying. Purifying means we become free from the lower vrittis or propensities of the mind. Lust, anger, greed, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, illusion, mada, pride, and matsarya, envy. We become free from that, and then, or concomitantly, our meditation on Krishna, or thoughts of Krishna, that increases. So it's all an ongoing process. Okay, I'll stop there and finish. These are short sessions, so continue in the afternoon. I didn't really get around to what I was supposed to speak on. So, okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Getting bits and pieces here, drop by drop. Okay, Hare Krishna, we'll break up and reconvene later on. Hare Krishna.
Jai.